I think when it comes to things like using AI for cyber attacks and things like this, we're already pretty close. But I think even with those capabilities, as they exist right now, it still is not overly concerning to release models on par with the most capable we have right now and to release them open source. And I think it's even better than the alternative of keeping them closed.
Welcome to the Regulating AI Podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to the Regulating AI Podcast. Artificial intelligence, AI, stands at the forefront of technological evolution, with experts predicting that it could add trillions of dollars to our GDP, but it could also negatively impact our workforce and national security. So how do we regulate it without stifling innovation? Our podcast features insights from various perspectives. We've had industry leaders and CEOs, we've had government officials and legislators, we've had leaders of advocacy groups and academics. Together, they address pivotal questions that are needed to create practical legislation. I'm very excited to have Professor Zico Coulter with us today. He's an associate professor at Carnegie Mellon University and also the chief scientist of AI research at Bosch USA, a leading automobile company. I invited him on this show as it is very important to get many different perspectives towards framing AI legislation. Welcome, Zico. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the Regulating AI Podcast. Zico, as I mentioned, our audience is global, vast and wide, members of Congress, staff, think tanks, industry, civil rights groups, etc. Can you tell them a little bit about your background and what do you do at Carnegie Mellon University?
Absolutely. So I've been at Carnegie Mellon University for 12 years now, and my group largely works very broadly on machine learning and AI. And what that means is we develop sort of new algorithms for new kinds of machine learning models, as well as do a lot of work in assessing the reliability and robustness of state-of-the-art machine learning systems.
Obviously, machine learning, state-of-the-art machine learning systems. Zico, as the world got to know about AI about a little over a year ago when ChatGPT came in, obviously you've been at it for 12 years or maybe even before. But since that time, Zico, we've had almost a daily barrage of change. Now, obviously you deal with it. We've had 3.5, 4, 4.5, we're multimodal. We've got agents, multi-agents. And now people are talking about even AGI. Now, recently there was an announcement of OpenAI having memory and things of that nature. How do legislators who are trying to put some framework of legislation around it create something that can keep the dynamic nature of this technology happening?
I think it is incredibly challenging to start off with. So let me just admit the challenges we have here. This speed and pace of innovation, it's not just an appearance that seems that way, maybe to a general audience. We feel it also as researchers. So as a professor in computer science, I am constantly feeling like we are under a barrage of new methods, new ideas, new technologies coming out and improving every single day. This makes it incredibly exciting, of course. It's a fantastic time to be a researcher in AI. I can't think of a more exciting time to be doing this. But at the same time, I fully appreciate the challenges here. Legislation typically operates at a much slower timescale than weeks and months by necessity, as it should, by the way. And so it's a totally reasonable question and a very hard question to ask. How do we, in fact, put legislation in place that can kind of manage this incredibly rapid pace of technology? And I don't have all the answers here. Let me first say, I don't think anyone has all the answers. But one thing I will say is I think we need to differentiate between regulating the technology and regulating the core usage and underlying principles of that technology and how it's deployed in the world. If you start talking about regulating technology, these architectures and this size and this type of model, that's going to be very quickly out of date. That's just the reality of things. These things move very fast. We're going to have quick transitions in this space. But on the other hand, the end uses of this technology, what are people going to do with it? How is it going to be leveraged by companies, by governments, by other organizations? Those things change at a much slower pace. We're still using AI in technologies like search and advertising, right? And that's been going on at least 20 years now, more than that. And so while I think there are absolutely challenges that new technologies bring, these methods are definitely much more capable than things we've seen before. The reality is a lot of the final end products, a lot of the things we want to sell to customers or for customers or governments want to provide to citizens, these things change at a slower rate. And I think a lot of the uses of AI technology are ones where we have a reasonable handle on it. And the challenge is going to come in understanding how do we put guardrails and frameworks around these end uses in a way that enables them to leverage advances in technology while respecting a lot of the norms that we are used to in these domains.
So, Zico, just to follow up on a very important point, you said, let's not worry about the size of the model, the token size, this size, that size, because that's going to be changed. Let's worry about the end user. Now, the EU AI Act takes a horizontal approach across the board to regulation. In the US, we are focused more sectoral or industry. Is that what you're, when you say end user, just for our audience who might not be deep learning, machine learning experts?
So I think there is room for both, but it's not just the end user, it's also the end application. For example, if we're talking about AI in the automotive space or in the advertising space or in the healthcare space, these are all use cases. These are all applications of this technology that has been considered for many years. While I think it is worth attempting and thinking about how we can regulate AI as a technology itself, what I think is really even more important is to regulate the ways in which AI can be applied to specific domains. So there should be very clear legislation about how to apply AI to a field like healthcare, to a field like automotive, which can build on a vast wealth of information we have already established in these fields. But also understanding that AI regulation is one where we are much less experienced is needed across the board.
So you're saying it's a combination, maybe a little bit of a hybrid. Now, you brought up automotive, so if I may just take you a little bit further up, self-driving cars, you're involved with Bosch. When cars have an issue, they have a recall system. So let's say if an AI system causes damage or some harm, who should be liable? The developer of the system, the implementer, or the user in this case? What is your perspective on that?
So I do think there's no single answer to this. And I know I'm equivocating here on all my responses, but I think it is a very nuanced question and it deserves a nuanced treatment. The reality is there are many use cases of AI where I think ultimately the user is the one responsible for content they create, for actions they take, for all these things aided by AI. I am a believer that in most cases, what AI is a powerful enabler and a powerful tool, right? So I can be more productive if I use a tool like ChatGPT or other AI systems to aid in my work. But very clearly, I am the one responsible for that work. If I use ChatGPT to draft an email, then I'm still responsible for that email. I can't go and blame ChatGPT for it. On the other hand, there are times where companies release products that start to operate, at least, in a relatively more autonomous fashion. And here I don't mean things like autonomous vehicles as a whole, right? This is a very extreme case of this. What I mean is any AI system that starts to take actions without user approval of each individual action. And there are obvious good use cases for this sometimes. Maybe we want to handle some rote tasks in an automated fashion, sending out email, stuff like this, right? If there is software that is marketed as letting AI act autonomously, then my belief is that there's another level of requirement for the safety and the guardrails we need to provide on top of these systems, in contrast to ones where a human is in the loop at every point. And in that case, when there really is a system that's acting and marketed as acting autonomously, acting as an agent, taking its own actions in some sense, at that point, I do believe that the developer of that software starts to become liable for actions that could be taken en masse by their software if it does so without the approval of the user in a way that very obviously deviates from the desired behavior of the system. And I think that onus becomes more and more strong as you add more and more autonomy into these systems. So the more and more these systems are thought to be operating on their own, the more it does become the responsibility of the developer. They are the ones ultimately for such systems who have to provide some modicum of assurance that the system's going to act as it is intended to.
That's a great point. As you said, it could be the developer. It depends on the level of autonomy. If I may just briefly touch on a specific example, during the New Hampshire primary, there were calls made using President Biden's voice, telling people not to go in and vote during the general election. It was done using 11 Labs software, and then there was a telco, and then there was a company doing it. Where do you think the responsibility would lie? Not trying to put you on the spot, but these are questions that legislators are grappling with right now.
Absolutely. My view in this situation is a company that used the software in this way is the one ultimately responsible. There is a bit of subtlety there because I think companies like 11 Labs should put up some amount of guardrails to prevent their systems from easily being misused by bad actors. I think that is more and more an onus on companies releasing these very general purpose tools, is that there absolutely should be some amount of protections in place to prevent the most obvious misuse. But let's also acknowledge the fact that a lot of these tools and technologies are in the open. And if it's not using one bit of software, they'll use another bit of software, whoever wants to use it. And so bad actors will be able to use AI maliciously to produce misinformation, to produce bad content that we do not want to be distributed. And ultimately, it is going to be the responsibility of the creators and distributors of that content. They are actors taking actions, making very clear decisions. And like any other cases of fraud, they should be treated accordingly.
Okay. You know, as I said, those are things that our legislators are grappling with. Just if we can just talk a little bit about ethics, how do you think AI regulation can strike a balance between innovation and ensuring safety and ethical use? Because we talk about innovate responsibly in our organization. How do you think we can strike that balance, Siegel?
I think in general, it's very hard to legislate ethical use of a technology. We all know that most technologies can be used for good purposes and can be used for very bad purposes. And to a certain degree, I think the legislation has to come on the people doing that usage and to a degree less on the technology itself. Where it becomes a bit of a gray area is that there are a lot of technologies we're developing right now in AI that very easily lend themselves to misuse and which make it, in some sense, overly simplified for bad actors to take sort of malicious actions. And to a certain degree, I think there should be regulations in place that at least require companies to invest best efforts to try to prevent this sorts of use. Even if it can be circumvented by state actors, by sort of other adversaries, there should still be some amount of effort put in place to prevent what I'll call obvious, trivial misuse by everyone that has access to the tool. I would add one more point to this, which is a different aspect of ethics when it relates to AI systems. And this is the ethics of the creation of these systems to begin with. I'm not talking about the longer term, are these systems going to eventually cause catastrophic harm to humanity? But I am talking about the very unclear nature about which topics like copyright come up when as it regards the creation of these models. We know for a fact these models are created right now based upon large amounts of copyrighted data. And it is genuinely both a scientific and legal question whether or not this use counts as fair use. Is it memorization? Can it memorize it, but it only matters if it can recreate it? Can it not memorize it at all? Is all training fair use simply because it's how humans learn? I think any extreme here is a bit of a mischaracterization, but the reality is we don't really know. This is something that even we in research are still grappling with right now and trying to figure out to some degree.
Well, you made some very interesting points, because if it has memory, then how do you put legal liability, et cetera, which is what some of the things are saying. Zico, how can regulations address the issue of algorithmic bias and make sure fair and equitable outcomes are there for all demographics when you're building in these algorithms, et cetera? Is bias-free algorithms even a possibility?
My short answer to that would be no. I don't think we have the technology or even the understanding of what that means to create what you call bias-free algorithms. Even just from a purely mathematical perspective, there are different mathematical frameworks and definitions of what fair decisions are or what unbiased decisions are. The bad news is these are often incompatible with each other, in that you can't satisfy multiple different, seemingly very reasonable definitions of fair or unbiased decisions. And so ultimately, what I would push for here, and so I honestly think that trying to legislate fairness or unbiasedness at the level of the algorithm is, to a certain extent, definitely doomed to fail. We don't even have a framework for talking about that. And trying to put it in place and writing some vague legislation that says algorithms have to be unbiased, there's nothing that really means. We don't know what that means. Even experts in the field, even mathematicians, don't know what this means. Now, this is why what I think needs to be done in many cases is understand what are those questions, what are those end uses? Because again, this is about the end use, not about the algorithm itself. What are those end uses where we need potentially to legislate the condition that decisions cannot be made independent of human judgment entirely? Humans are fallible too, certainly. There's no question about this. Humans have had a massive history of making horribly biased decisions. But at the same time, human intuition, understanding, and really just our core concept of what unbiased should mean, this has been developed over a very long time. And we are starting to have legal and ethical frameworks, or we have been working a long time to create legal and ethical frameworks for what this means in different domains. So when it comes to things like financial decisions, we have a certain notion of what an unbiased decision or what a fair decision would be. And what I think should be legislated is that there should be certain domains and decisions where we are unwilling to put, to a certain extent, complete faith and trust in algorithms without recourse, ultimately, to human decisions. Now, that's also easier said than done, because, of course, you could have a human check a box and say, yep, I agree with all these decisions. It really is about treating AI in these domains as a tool that can inform people, that can help people, but ultimately puts the power in the hands of the user such that they can make informed decisions corresponding to the ethical frameworks that are already being developed in these fields.
So are you talking about like healthcare and things of that nature?
Things like healthcare, financial decisions, credit decisions, job decisions, things like this, marketing decisions. There are a lot of things like approving loans and stuff like this. There are a lot of decisions that we make, and healthcare being another good example. There are a lot of decisions we make where I would not want to trust an AI system to autonomously on its own make an approval or not of whether someone should receive a loan. Even if these systems get better than they are currently right now, that should be a decision that falls under human approval. And what I think can be legislated to a degree, it should not be completely determined by algorithms, in my view. We should be able to put in place frameworks where these tools can assist decision makers in their decisions, but where ultimately a lot of decisions are put in the hands of people, and AI is used as a tool to, in some sense, empower people.
Wow, you are a machine learning person and you're advocating a human in the loop. I assume you know there are tools that are doing this without a human in the loop, whether it's recruiting, financial decisions, housing decisions. You're saying we do need a human in the loop for some of these decisions.
For some of them. And I think they're obviously, I'm not talking about every decision we make. There's tons of things that are happening in the background right now that are being processed by very simplistic algorithms, honestly, even, that probably can and should operate like that. But exactly where I think the role of legislation lies is in understanding which decisions can and cannot be trusted in some sense to pure algorithmic implementations. Because I absolutely believe there are cases where, and certain classes of decisions for which we still, I don't know how long this will be, but I think it will be a very long time because again, these are not even well-defined from a mathematical standpoint. There are cases where we will continue to need a human in the loop in order to achieve ethical and fair decisions.
That's a very interesting point you're making for our audience. Zico, you obviously work on machine learning and some of these tools. There's a big debate going on, and it's also being heard here in Capitol Hill and other places about open source, closed source. There are two camps. There's this issue, people say, innovation versus safety. Where do you come out on some of these things?
Looking to make the most out of AI advancements and innovation? Visit regulatingai.org to learn more about how best to optimize the use and integration of AI and sign up for the Regulating AI newsletter to keep up to date with the latest in AI governance and regulation.
So I should probably start everything with this, saying that I am an advocate for open models. I should place myself firmly in that camp. We as researchers benefit tremendously from open models, and we are frankly able to use open models to do our research, our assessments of the reliability, the robustness, all these things of AI systems, owing largely to the availability of open source models. And were these models not open source, we would be in a very different position right now as researchers. There are definitely some subtle points here. However, I think a lot of these questions that are still, for the time being, relatively forward-looking and hypothetical. A common argument that's put forward is if these models are all open source and anyone can use them, anyone can do whatever they want with them, and aren't there some obvious bad cases of that? And I don't want to diminish the harm that current models can do, because current models can be harmful. But what I would say is I don't think there is any current model that would be that bad to open source. Simply put, even the most powerful models we have are ultimately not that capable. I think it would be absolutely fine to have open source variants of these models available. Common sort of objections put in place on this is that, oh, you could create lots of misinformation at much higher velocities than you can currently. False images, stuff like fake images, these are certainly all problems, but they are currently problems anyway, right? They're already problems. There are already open source models that can do this. And we aren't seeing somehow a proliferation necessarily of just open source tools for this. People can do just fine using closed source models. That's point number one. I do think there is a potential future where the capabilities of these models reach a certain level where we do become uncomfortable giving unfettered access to these models to anyone. To be honest, I have a hard time knowing when that will happen. I have a long history of bad predictions when it comes to AI, so you shouldn't trust me on any of these things. But the reality is it could be 5 years, it could be 10 years, it could be 20 years, maybe it's 100 years. I think it's going to be less than that, but still. And then I think there is an interesting question. But the other thing I would offer is that we've found ourselves in what amounts to an actually fairly reasonable kind of equilibrium right now. And what I mean by that is, the closed source models that we see right now are more capable than current open source models in most settings. And so there is a way in which these closed source, these releases of closed source models that are a bit more capable, at least along pure sort of capabilities dimensions than open source models, provides a kind of preview, a preview of access for what we can do with these AI systems. And in doing so, provides us with a bit of guidelines about whether we should be concerned or not about releasing open source models that are similarly capable. And right now, the reality is, I don't think there's a problem. I think it would be fine to have open source models that were as capable as the best models like GPT-4. I think the reason we're keeping them private right now is largely economic, which is fine. Companies want to make money from these things, but it's not actually for safety right now. There may be a future with which this is true, but it isn't the case right now. And so if right now, I do think the advantages of having available open source models far outweigh a world in which we somehow lock these things all down and only a very few small number of companies and state actors have access to tools like this. I don't think that's a better world than the one we currently live in.
So what you're saying is you're not worried because the open source models are not as powerful and who knows 5, 10, 20 years. But now when you look at Zuckerberg said Llama 3 is coming out, which he's said is going to be as powerful as 4, ChatGPT 4, more Mistral is coming out. If these models, and there are several others that are out there, and then obviously Zuckerberg said he would even open source AGI. If these models get much more powerful, then you would say that we should put some guardrails around them, Rico?
What I would say is there's no concerns right now in terms of open sourcing something that is as powerful as GPT-4. The notion of open sourcing AGI, I don't know what that means, to be fair. And I don't think anyone really knows what that means yet, what it would mean to open source a model like that, right? So we don't know. But what I will say is, with current models, even the best current closed source models, there is not yet a problem. I think this is something that needs to be monitored, needs to be tracked, and we need to understand. And I don't mean, there's some very far-fetched examples of sort of possible behavior of bad AI systems, but I don't think you even have to be that quite that far-fetched. I think in when it comes to things like using AI for cyber attacks and things like this, we're already pretty close. But I think even with those capabilities, as they exist right now, it still is not overly concerning to release models on par with the most capable we have right now and to release them open source. And I think it's even better than the alternative of keeping them closed.
So right now, you're saying we don't need to worry. One worry, and it comes up on our show from some legislators and other people, is this whole notion that there could be some kind of a monopoly. We've seen that with social media. Call it regulatory capture. We're building large language models. It's pretty expensive. You need a ton of GPUs. You need amazing talent. So you need to be at Carnegie to be able to do this. Is that a concern? Is that should be a concern for our legislators or their staff around the world?
I think this is probably as large a concern as the potential negative side effects of open source. And this is also a concern which is directly counteracted by the availability of open source models to a degree. Now, I do believe that companies are well within their rights to build tools like this and sell them and keep them private. And I think there may be a future in which we really do want to try to think about how we can limit certain capabilities of models, definitely. But I also think it is a huge risk if these sorts of models are only controlled by a few corporations, which effectively can then make all the decisions about how and when they are deployed, who has access, who doesn't have access, et cetera. I think the competitive environment of the current marketplace has been very helpful for this. So, of course, OpenAI is seen as a leader in this area and probably still are the leader in this area. But there is competition, right? There are other companies angling for a similar model that, as a whole, do benefit the entire ecosystem. And so, to be honest, I think that both of these two things should be watched for, but I think the current setting we have for either extreme regulatory capture by a single monopoly or open source models that are getting too powerful, these are two extreme views that I think are not quite reflective of the current situation we find ourselves in, and which, honestly speaking, currently allows for a lot of flexibility our current situation does.
Okay, so that's something we should, as you said, be as concerned as we would be about the negative effects of open source. Zico, you are at an academic institution, so I want to talk to you a little bit about workforce. There are all kinds of reports, McKinsey, IMF, that we as a society are going to face around the world some serious changes in our workforce, whether it's 30%, 40%, 50%, as you said, you're not good at predicting. I don't think some of these institutions are as good at predicting. It could be 60%. But I think we all agree that transformation is going to happen. Do you think regulators should play a role? And do you believe there are major transformation and it's going to happen in the shorter duration or the longer durations for our audience?
Right. So to answer those questions sort of bit by bit, first of all, is there going to be transformation of the workforce? Yes, I believe so. I think it's inevitable when you have a technology that is this potentially transformative. And just to put my cards on the table, I do believe this is a transformative technology. I do think that this is on par with something like the internet. I think probably the internet's a better example than something like electricity or the steam engine. I just think those examples are so far removed from them that we have a hard time kind of contextualizing this. But I think the internet's a better example. A lot of companies that are around right now existed before the internet, right? And they were doing the same thing roughly before the internet that they are doing now. They're just doing it in a different way. There are, of course, new companies that were not around before the internet. And some of the biggest companies right now are based upon the internet. But I suspect something of a similar nature will happen here, meaning that jobs change. The internet changed things. We do not have the same jobs we once did, but we also adapted to it in a way that did not quite cause the ultimate sort of invalidation of jobs. Communication between different continents, everything was now all of a sudden instantaneous. There was massive potential for disruption, and there was massive disruption, to be clear, right? There was absolute disruption, but no one talks about that, I don't think. We don't currently talk about it very often as this cataclysmic event that destroyed the entire fabric of the economy and things like this. Overall, I think we should be thinking of it in a similar way. There is going to be a transformation of work. Companies will transform. New companies, I mean, already, by the way, my work has been transformed by the availability even of the simplest tools, right? I don't know how teaching is going to adapt to this, given the ease of which you can generate. Most of my assignments I give out can be solved now by these programs. That's a big difference. I think that massive adaptation has to happen, no question. But I don't think, personally, it's going to be something that transforms or maybe devastates the economy and sort of the workforce in the ways that I think people might think. But now to your other question about, should regulation play a role? Yes, absolutely. Regulation should play a role, just like it did in the internet. And it had to adapt fast there too, right? We had to put in place regulations and we probably got it wrong a lot of times. And we can and should learn from that. We need to put in regulation around this to do our best to make sure that everyone does benefit as much as possible from this transformation, just like we have from transformations in the past. And so I am a firm believer that regulation, including regulation that I sometimes don't really like, that sort of impedes my ability to do work the way I would like to, ideally, that's okay. That is part of the push and pull of the natural order of things, I would say, or the natural order of how sort of governments should be acting. If everyone is happy with the regulations governments put in place, then they've made some mistake, right? This should be a tension between companies that have very monetary goals that are trying to make money, researchers that want to publish and do open research and release results and understand how we can push forward science, the public using these tools, and regulators and governments that want to put a framework around all of it that balances these things out. And so I think these things have to be balanced, and there is absolutely a role for regulation here. But I also am, roughly speaking, and this varies by maybe week to week, but at least right now, I'm feeling not entirely unoptimistic about our ability to address some of these things.
So you're saying you're in the camp of transformative technology and you think there's a role for regulations. Just to conclude on that question, if I'm in our audience, a customer service rep, or I'm a programmer in Python, or I'm a marketing content person, what should I do? Because everything I hear from McKinsey and others is that my job's kind of going away. Are there skilling, upskilling? What should someone like that do?
My first bit of advice to everyone right now is to use these tools and learn how to use these tools as tools. They are tools right now. They can enhance everyone's productivity, I think, or most people's productivity if used properly. But we do have to be careful, and we have to learn how to do that. It's not obvious to many people how to best use these tools. I remember when I first started playing around with chatbots, this generation of chatbots, I didn't know what to do. You learn from experience. And as to the notion of workforces being entirely replaced here, I think there is, and especially when it comes to workforces, there are currently actually, in many cases, being used to train these models. That probably is the highest risk. I would actually say that's the area we should think about most right now, and think about compensation structures and stuff for this right now. I do think that for the most part, end users of the technology, people whose current job, in theory, could benefit a lot from it, A, they won't be replaced immediately. And I think even in the same notion of human in the loop, which I advocated for before, they won't be replaced in many cases at all. What will happen is our job descriptions will change and we will adapt to using these tools to hopefully be much more productive. The way I sort of put it to people is there aren't many jobs I know of where you're ever done with work. If companies can increase productivity by 60%, what they're going to do is they're going to increase productivity by 60%. They're not going to cut their workforce to maintain their current productivity because you know what? Their competitors are going to be more productive. And if they have a good business that's profitable, they will benefit by being more productive. So I do think that there will certainly be changes to what jobs mean. Absolutely. But I'm less concerned about the wholesale replacement of people. I think people's roles will change and we will hopefully, if this is developed in a good way, get more done with the aid of these tools and be able to use them as tools.
So what you're saying is not wholesale changes. There will be a human in the loop. Companies will be more productive and there will be more opportunities. Just one more point, because education is so critical. Do you think because of this, our education systems need to change? We keep pounding on STEM. Do you think there is a little bit more focus on liberal arts? A bigger view of picture that needs to be done?
So I actually was also a dual philosophy and computer science major in college. So I have some love for both these two things, I'll just say. I would not hazard, given my current place in the field, I would not hazard to guess about the relative strengths of liberal arts versus STEM in this debate. But I would make two important points about education. The first is that we very soon need to figure out how to educate people about these tools. That is, there's no question, right? Just like we had to educate people about how to use other tools, computers and the internet, we will have to educate people about how to use these sorts of tools. And it's very hard right now because they're changing so fast. If you make a course on ChatGPT, it seems very hopping on a trend, right? This doesn't seem like something we should have a course about yet, right? But that I think that will stabilize and we will figure out how to have courses on these tools because, again, they are incredibly useful tools. And just like you should learn how to use a computer, you should learn how to use these AI tools. The second thing I will say, though, is about concerns right now regarding the misuse of these tools in education. And I really just mean things like handing in essays that are written by ChatGPT right now, which is seen as a huge problem. A lot of people right now are proposing kind of technological fixes. Oh, we can design software. We'll detect if it's ChatGPT written or not. To be honest, that's a very hard problem to solve. It's not easy to solve. And I think actual technological solution we have that's going to be foolproof. So I would not advocate for that. What I would instead advocate for is an understanding about the nature of the work that we assign, hopefully in a way that encourages people to learn the proper way. And here's what I mean by this. I have two young daughters and they're learning math right now in school. And all the math they are learning, I can do on a calculator. And they know how to use a calculator, in fact, so they could do it on a calculator if they wanted. They are nonetheless happy to do this math because they understand that this is not about getting the right answer. The teacher is not concerned with, can you add these? I don't know what the number is, so let me ask you what it is. They are doing it to practice. It's about practice. It's about learning these things, maybe at a high level, maybe they don't fully understand yet, but it's about practice. And when we ask students to write essays, if we do it in the proper way, students will also understand the goal here is not to produce an essay, it's to practice critical thinking. That's what writing essays are about, right? And yes, we all know you could get pretty lousy, maybe seemingly correctly formed essay from ChatGPT. But that's not the point of the exercise. And so I think just like math has adapted to evolve, to be taught in a world with calculators, People still need to know numerical sense, right? They need to understand that a basic sense, it's a number, common sense, despite the fact they could punch things in calculators too. We need to give a similar intuition about writing and about a lot of the things that we are worried right now and about programming, right? A lot of the things right now that we are worried about ChatGPT kind of letting people cheat on. It's a new era for us because we as educators, I'm in computer science. You can solve all the questions in an introductory programming course by just typing the question into ChatGPT. We are not used to that. So we have to adapt. But if we adapt, I think be able to, and I'll teach people how and when to use these tools, we will be able to do a very similar thing as math has adapted to being taught in a world where calculators exist.
So you're saying is obviously learn critical thinking, have the foundation that goes through. Is there a role for industry and academic institutions to work together on this and other regulations, Zico?
So I always think there's room for academic and industry collaborations. I have one foot in industry. I have one foot in academia, my main foot in academia. I always believe there is a benefit from the tight integration of corporations and companies trying to commercialize and industrialize ideas and tools with the universities investigating these things, building them in many cases, or building the foundation for them in many cases, and just trying to innovate in a public sphere of science. I think absolutely. There's been so many examples of mutual benefit from these two spheres interacting. And personally, I think that maybe in the past, the regulatory agencies have been a little bit further removed from this. There's honestly been this, at least in computer science, a huge exchange between industry and research and academic research. Maybe regulators have, for the most part, been a little bit more removed from this, but I think it's also a growing appreciation of the benefit they can bring. And so I absolutely do think that there is room for connecting industry and academia and government together in a way that ultimately benefits everyone.
So you're saying that there should be collaboration between industry and academics and maybe more for the benefit of everybody. Zico, how can regulations ensure that AI technologies are developed and deployed in a manner that respects basic fundamental human rights and obviously promotes global cooperation and understanding? Now, I know I'm talking about a big wish list, but is that a possibility?
Those are very lofty goals, of course. And I think when it comes down to it, most regulations we put in place, or better or worse, and successful or not at achieving this, are about trying to improve the overall human condition, right? This is why we form governments on a very philosophical level. Because of this, I do believe that AI legislation should have a similar ultimate target, the betterment of humanity. Not an easy solution, of course, but that is why we are thinking about legislation at all and about building tools like this. I think most developers of AI technology believe that their tools will ultimately benefit people. There aren't many people thinking that they're developing tools, rightly or wrongly. I think most people develop tools because they believe they will be useful and beneficial to end users. I don't have a recipe for how we ensure that regulation and technology ultimately benefit people instead of causing harm. I think there have obviously been examples of technologies that we developed with the best of intentions, but were ultimately detrimental to humanity. It is the role of everyone working in this space, critics, regulators, companies, researchers, everyone, to try to center their work toward a positive direction. I think most people operate in this framework and we have disagreements about whether this is successful or not, but this should be our goal. And in this space, there will be sometimes things that we don't like, right? There will be sometimes when we have disagreements, but that's okay. It is good to have multiple perspectives in this field to have people that vehemently disagree with my opinions here, because ultimately it will benefit the totality, hopefully, of the world. And so I have my opinions about why I think my work is going to make AI more robust, going to make these systems more reliable. And I have work in industry hoping to build useful products that will use AI technology to benefit users. But I hope that there are people out there who think that I am wrong, that I'm taking the wrong approach, who can sometimes even get things legislated that I find inconvenient, because that's part of the democratic process. And this is part of the process by which we have many stakeholders that all contribute their ideas and ultimately, hopefully, lead us to a future where these technologies do benefit humanity as a whole.
I think those are great points. So what you said is we should all work towards the benefit of humanity. And you welcome many disparate voices, even people who would critique you, to keep you centered. And let us all work towards the big goal. Zico, finally, you know our audience is, as I said, lawmakers, think tanks, companies, etc. Your final words to them in terms of what you would like to see happen.
What I would like to see happen in the AI space is a degree of research and focus and attention precisely on that point that I made back at the beginning of this discussion. And that point was about the autonomy of AI tools as we are working on them. I think in many cases, we don't fully appreciate the difference between a tool where there is a human in the loop and tools where there are really not humans in the loop, or we sort of start to remove people's decision-making ability from different aspects of the problem. And I think that what we need, the most important points to address in what I think of as AI security, are not the far-out threats that may or may not materialize. It is the very real ways in which we can use AI and build AI tools which may differ wildly from their intended behavior because we don't really yet have a full grasp on these systems, and we aren't as experienced with them as we are with classical software. And so what I hope for is that we start to build and treat this difference as very crucial to our reliable and safe deployment of AI, and do so in a way that prioritizes the right level of interaction on the right of human interaction on the right tasks. So ultimately, people can make the best use possible of these AI technologies. Now, this is a rather narrow point. It's the point that kind of I work on personally in a lot of my own research. So I don't think this is necessarily the single biggest problem in AI, but I think it is the one that needs the most work right now, and that's why I'm working on it. The more lofty goals of benefiting humanity as a whole, I hope that's the outcome of all of this. But as a scientist, what I'm focused on right now are these very particular problems where I see gaps in where systems break and where they work well. And that is where I think we currently need some of the most attention from companies, from researchers, and ultimately, yes, from regulators too.
Wow, that was very well said, Zico. Thanks so much for taking the time. I thought this was going to be a conversation about MLOps, PyTorch, and all the other things, but you covered and I could have gone on because there were so many topics I wanted to ask on, but we'd love to have you again. Thanks so much for taking the time. Really, really appreciate it.
It's great to be here. And I do love PyTorch too, so I can talk endlessly about PyTorch also. But it was great, of course, to talk about these topics. They're incredibly important, and thank you for having me very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.